Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
What up, it's your boy Slone Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen, in a world full of followers, be proud to be different, be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women, everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'm going to ask you this, though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout-out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Well, that clip didn't end too well. Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, I've wanted this gentleman on my show for quite some time. You know, those that know me know that I got my start in boxing. So to be able to have this former champion, Olympian, and a tremendous commentator in the sport on my show is truly an honor and a privilege for me. With that being said, I want to welcome El Diamante, Raul Marquez. How's it going,
hey,
brother?
It's going great, man. You got the nickname right, the pronunciation, the accent, El Diamante. That's very good. I was very impressed.
Well, I appreciate that coming from somebody that has his face on TV, you know, every weekend, and is a true aspect of the sport. You know, I talked to you before we went live, and I told you the show kind of goes a different way. You know,
you did. Yes, you did.
Life is a struggle on its own, and 2020 it's got to be the most confusing year of all. But I think, me being an OG, I think I can ask you this question. You know, when you look at privilege, I think people take it out of context. I think people truly don't understand it. You know, being that you come from a one-bedroom house in Valle Hermoso, Mexico.
That's correct.
Being able to, you know, become something in the sport. To be able to give to a tremendous family, a tremendous wife. Would you say that privilege isn't something that is granted by color? Privilege is something that is granted by heart, perseverance, and passion.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, my dad always had a passion for boxing. You know, he was a big boxing fan. Back in his days, he never got to, you know, get to a boxing gym, but he did, I want to call it like street fighting when he was in school over there in Mexico, right? But he used to follow all the old-time Mexican fighters like Ruben Olivares, Carlos Zárate, Lupe Pintor, you know, the guys from back in the days and, you know, from Mexico, right? And, he's just a big fan of boxing, you know, and obviously, you know, when I was born in Mexico, in Valle Hermoso, yeah, and I was, you know, I was born with a midwife. I wasn't born in a hospital and all that. I was born with a midwife in a one-bedroom house that we lived in. of course, I don't remember. I was little, you know. Like I only lived in Mexico like maybe 2 years, and then we moved to Chicago, Illinois, and then my brother was born there. But he always wanted to, you know, he loved boxing, you know. And the story is when I came out of my mom's womb, you know, he said that I was throwing punches, and he said he was going to make me a fighter. And that's it. That's what happened, you know. That's what happened.
You know, Raul, what did it mean? I mean, because you have this tremendous father who looked at you and said, I'm going to make something out of him. I'm going to make him a champion. You know, what did it mean for you growing up to have that type of aspect in your life? Because you and I both know it, you know, coming from impoverished lifestyles, that the father generally isn't in the home, and it's the mother that takes care of 6, 7, 8 kids, and it's a struggle. But what does it mean for you now, looking back as a man, knowing that you're given an opportunity?
Yeah, no, it means everything to me because, you know, coming from, you know, from Mexico and you know, my dad being, you know, that was his life in Mexico. So my mom too, but we came to the United States, you know, this is the land of opportunity. And he worked so hard to bring us over here, you know, to bring us over here and create our own opportunities, you know, not only just me, but, you know, my brother has done well for himself. He's in the banking industry. And my sister too, she does well. But you know, my path was boxing. You know, I started boxing, and for him to, you know, he was a machinist. For him to, you know, go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, get home at 3:30, tell me, hey, I'm gonna take a nap here in the living room real quick and wake me up, you know, so we could go to the gym by 5. And he didn't have to do that, you know. He could have just slept. He was tired. But for him to get up, and also, you know, it took for me to wake him up too, because if I didn't wake him up, then we probably wouldn't go, you know, because he'll be asleep. But it took that teamwork together, you know, to make that happen, you know. And you know, When I started boxing at 7 years old, and actually in the garage, and we lived in this neighborhood in Houston, who back then was mainly, you know, all Hispanic neighborhood. Well, I would say it was a rough neighborhood, you know, north side in Houston, Texas, north side. And I started boxing. He filled up an army bag, the green army bags. He filled it up with sawdust. And that was my heavy bag. And, you know, he trained me there just what he knew when I was 7 years old, just from him learning from different fighters that he saw growing up. And then, you know, he took me to a boxing gym. It was PABA, Progressive Amateur Boxing Association, on Dowling Street in Houston, Texas. And I had my first fight in 1980 at the Salvation Army Boys Club. And then after that, it just, you know, to me at that point, it was fun. It was just a hobby. Hey, this is fun. And I kept winning trophies. But, you know, had it been for my dad, that he pushed me and gave me that motivation and support. And also my mom too, you know, because, you know, she had to take care of me. My dad worked and take care of me, my brother, and my sister. But had my dad not been that kind of dad that was a family man, and he wanted to, for me to succeed in boxing, it's crazy, because I can't say, you know, how a lot of fighters, you know, they come from a boxing family. The grandpa was a fighter, or the dad was an ex world champion. You know, that's what's happening with my kids now, because I was an ex world champion. So let me, but in my dad's family, nobody was a fighter. Nobody was ever a fighter. He just loved boxing. He was he loved the sport. And, you know, like I said, I started when I was 8. I had my first fight, my first trophy, and I started winning so many fights. Nobody would beat me here in Houston. Nobody would beat me in the state of Texas. And, you know, and it just grew from there. It just grew. You know, the first time that I won the National Junior Olympics, I was 15 years old, which was a big tournament that I won. Because you win the Nationals, that's telling you something. Even though it's Junior Olympics, you know, there's certain ages. And that's when it first hit me, you know, hey, I would want to try to make the Olympic team one day, represent the United States of America. That's when I started taking the sport more, not just like a hobby. Oh, I'm going to win more trophies. No, it's like I want to try to make the Olympic team one day. And obviously that, you know, that's what happened in 1992. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you, you know, and you know this guy, I tried to make the team in 1988. I was young. I went to the Western Olympic Trials. I was trying to win the Western Olympic Trials to go to the Olympic Trials. I beat Frank Vassar. I beat someone else the first night. Then I beat Frank Vassar. And then in the semifinals, guess who I fought? We were just talking about him. Paul Vaden.
Paul Vaden, the ultimate.
I fought Paul Vaden, and the ultimate Paul Vaden. Speed, fast, you know. I want to say I was 18 years old. I had just turned 18 years old. And I was able to, you know, find the open division and all that. But I was trying to make that team. And I lost to Paul. Paul ended up winning the trials, the Western trials. He went on to the Olympic trials. And he lost to Kenny Gould, the guy that made the Olympic team in 88 at 147. Yeah. So, you know, I stuck around another 4 years. I was young. I mean, I had just turned 18. And the next year, in 1989, I win the Nationals. I beat everybody. I won the state. I beat some good guys, Alton Rice in the state for the Army. You know, the guys from the Army with Jesse Ravello, they were always good fighters. Up in and then the Nationals, I beat this guy that had been an alternate to Ron Morgan. I beat Patrick Byrd, Chris Byrd's brother, who had a lot of experience. Larry Dixon. I beat Emmett Litton in the finals of the Nationals in 1989. So I won the Nationals. That got me to be on the national team. And, of course, I traveled the whole world on the national team for 4 years. From 1989 to 1992, we competed. I mean, I fought the Russians like six times. I fought the Cubans twice, Germany, Canadians, Bulgarians, Yugoslavia, Mexico, Spain. I mean, I was all over the world, you know, world championships in Moscow, got a bronze medal. And then, you know, when I made the Olympic team, I had to beat some really tough guys, you know, really tough guys to make the Olympic team. At the Olympic trials, I beat Antoine Eccles. I beat Lonnie Bradley, who went on to become a middleweight champion of the world. I beat Robert Allen. Remember Robert Allen?
Yeah.
I beat him. I knocked him out in three rounds in the amateurs. And he was tough. Then I beat Lonnie Bradley. Then I beat Antoine Eccles in the finals. Three good guys, man, to make the Olympic team, the 92 Olympic team. And
you did a tremendous job in the Olympic team. You know, we brought up, because if you know the sport, you look at the 84, the 88, and the 92 Olympic teams, and they were all very close, all interwoven. You know, you talk about Paul Vaden. The sport, to me, has always been about relationships. You know, people don't really have a true understanding that when you go in there and you go to war with somebody, the respect that you take away after that war. And now you and Paul Vaden are tremendous brothers in life. What are the relationships?
Oh, everybody.
Ahead,
let me tell you, it's boxing family. It's crazy. Like all those guys that I named a while ago that I fought, you know, every time we went toe-to-toe, man. Emmett Litton, we fought many times. You know, Robert Allen, Antoine Eccles, guys that I fought. Every time we see each other, man, we're like big kids in a candy store, man. We're hugging each other. Hey, what's going on? And nothing but love. Nothing but love, man.
You know, see, I want to ask you one more question, kind of off topic, just a little bit out of the sport. We'll kind of jump back in the sport in a second. But, you know, you went on to marry Jeanette. And
right.
You have five tremendous kids.
Right.
How much of that knowledge from your father have you instilled in your family, brother?
Oh, everything. Everything from, you know, being dedicated, whatever you decide to do in life, to, you know, saving money, be smart with your money. Just everything, you know, be careful when you're out there in stuck in traffic. You know, just always be looking around. You just don't know in today's crazy world, you know, who's, you know, that people could jump you from anywhere. And, it's, you know, things happen, you know, just I'm always worried about them, just like my dad was. I'm always trying to give him advice. It's like my dad still gives me advice. I'm about to be 50 years old, and my dad still treats me like I'm, 15 years old, you know? He does. Yeah, he does.
Get out of here.
You know, yeah, no, but I listen to him. I mean, you know, sometimes he's real repetitive with stuff, you know, but, I mean, he's right about a lot of things. I mean, look, besides him being my father, you know, I don't have many friends, but the ones that I have, they're older than me. I like to have friends that are older. And when I say older, you know, like 65, because they're knowledgeable, man. They know things about life that anything, relationships, money, investments. I just, you know, I get along with older people better. Like I just have a good relationship with them. And like I said, you know, up to this day, you know, my dad's always still giving me advice and, you know, do this, do that, or you should, you know. And I try to be the same way with my kids, with Arturo and Raul and Giovanni. Giovanni right now, that's, you know, he's a good top amateur. He's 20 years old. We were going to fight in the Nationals a couple of weeks ago, but it got postponed because of the COVID problem. So now it's not good. I believe it's in the end of March. And, you know, Giovanni's really good. Giovanni just turned 20, and he lost to the guy that made the Olympic team, Tiger. They call him Tiger. And then, you know, of course, Arturo tried boxing. We had signed him with Top Rank. And then, you know, he fought one of those opponents that poked his eye. He was having problems with his eye the last two fights. We got him at 10-0 with 6 knockouts. And we had plans for him to fight on Showtime. But the last 2 or 3 fights, his eye was really getting problems, you know. And he's got like it wasn't a detached retina, but it's called a corneal abrasion. So we just, you know, said, hey, you know, he didn't have no reason to continue to keep fighting and take a risk of,
yeah.
You know, he's got a daughter and losing it. I mean, boxing is a sport. He's got a good job now. He's working. He's doing fine. Same thing with my oldest son, Raul, you know, like, he's working too. And he's got a decent job, and he's doing good for himself. You know, he tried to, he was really good, you know, but, you know, he just had lack of, discipline and dedication. You know, every kid is different. Every kid is different. Not everybody could be a boxer. Not everybody has that in them to be a fighter. And then, you know, I got Liam, who's, you know, I started all over again with Liam, and then I finally have my daughter, Alina. Liam is going to be 4, and I ask him if he's going to be a boxer. He says, nah. And then sometimes he'll bring me Mickey Mouse. He's like, I want to punch Mickey Mouse. So he starts punching me because I'm watching boxing or whatever, studying some of my, you know, some of the fights that I have to study for the future for Showtime and stuff. And he wants to start punching the Mickey Mouse like a punching bag. And of course, Alina, you know, she's going to be 2. She don't know nothing. So she's got Minnie Mouse, and she wants to punch Minnie Mouse too. So, yeah, I mean, but back to your question. Yeah. A lot of the stuff that my dad has, put in my head, you know, since I was young and little, yeah, I put it in my, I give my kids the same advice. I mean, because I know it's good advice. And, I'm not going to say I'm perfect or, you know, I can't say I lived a perfect life and, I never made mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes. I made mistakes, but I always try to get back on a straight line and go forward, you know, not fall off that straight line and do good for myself and for my family.
Well, sir, you truly have. You know, I kind of want to take you back to 1993. I think it's a defining moment in your career. You know, I think it's a fight that was a step up, because most people don't, you know, I primarily do a lot of MMA, and I reserve my legends in boxing for special shows because I don't want to water my legends in boxing down. And you know, we look at boxers different, and the MMA world don't understand it. They think you've got a boxer that's 12-13-0 that he's fought the best. No, he hasn't even been given a true test yet. But, you know, I take you back to 1993 because you fought Tony Small. You know, he was 29-7 at the time. And that was truly your first test as a pro.
He was a veteran. He was a veteran. He had fought Chavez, the dad. As a matter of fact, he might have gone the distance with Chavez. He was a tough guy, you know. Tony Small, that was in Atlantic City at the convention center. I can't remember who was the main event. Maybe Evander Holyfield, Riddick Bowe, one of them guys. But it was a tough fight because he had a lot of veteran moves. You know, he knew how to survive. He knew how to frustrate me. And, of course, I was looking for the knockout. You know, that's what a lot of young kids, you know, they make the mistake when they're fighting a guy that, oh, this guy's never been knocked out. He's older. You know, I want to be the guy that knocks him out or puts him out of there. Or I know this guy's going to give me some rounds, but I want to get him out of there. And they're focused so much on trying to land just one big shot. And that's what happened to me. You know, I was trying to – every punch that I, you know, would throw would be with bad intentions, you know, instead of, you know, working behind my jab and putting my combinations together and breaking them down with body shots. Not every shot's got to be hard. And that's a mistake that I did, you know. I mean, I won the fight. Was I happy with my performance? No. When I went back and I looked at it, I'm like, man, why couldn't I just put my shots together more combinations, more jabs? Just let it flow more. But, you know, you just, when you're an up-and-coming fighter, you have to go through fights like that. Everybody does. And they either make you or they break you, you know. But I felt like he was a pretty good test because, you know, at least I got to go to the rounds. They went the distance. I said, hey, I went the rounds. I don't know. I think it was an 8-round fight. And it was a learning experience, and that's what I got from it.
You know, and just a few fights later, bro, I think you truly cemented your name in the sweet science, and you showed the sporting world that, you know, Raul Marquez was here to stay. And that's your fight against Jorge Vaca, you know, at the I believe it was at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. You know.
Yep. That was.
That was a tremendous outing for you, you know. But, see, these are defining moments. And when you look at that fight, would you say that that was the fight that truly had you realize that you had became a household name and you had, you know, truly gained the recognition that you needed to move forward in the sport?
I think it did. I think it did because, you know, he was an ex-world champion, a veteran, but he was an ex-world champion. Not like Smalls. This guy was an ex-world champion. Another veteran that's supposed to give me rounds. But what was so important about that fight, it was on the George Foreman-Michael Moore undercard. That was when Big George won the heavyweight title. No one expected that to happen. You remember that. And, you know, Michael Moore was the champ. And Michael Moore got knocked out by George Foreman. So I got a lot of attention because, you know, I was on that card, you know. And it was big for me because, you know, fighting at the MGM Grand, you know, Full House, HBO pay-per-view. And, again, it was another learning experience with Jorge Vaca. Different style from Smalls, and I beat him unanimous decision, could not stop him. But I think, you know, that fight showed that even though Vaca was on his way out at the end of his career, the fight still showed. And I was young and obviously didn't have the experience he did. He showed that, hey, you know what, I had the potential to beat some top 10 guys and hopefully become a world champion.
You know, I know we promised 30 minutes, but is it possible if I can get just a couple more questions in, brother, and then we'll kind of
absolutely,
wrap
man. Up. Yeah, no problem,
that.
Man.
Well, you because, do. You know, you go on, you know, to fight for the vacant IBF title. And
right.
It was a tremendous moment that many don't get to see in this sport. You know, you go back to 1949 with Joey Giambra Sr., the uncrowned champion, a man who refused to take a dive for the mob, never got an opportunity to fight for a world champion. You look at Livingstone Bramble, a man that fought Ray Boom Boom Mancini twice, and, you know, proved to the world that he was defined in the sweet science. What does it feel like for Raul Marquez, the man? What did it feel like winning that world title, holding that IBF belt, and looking at it? What did that moment mean to you?
Well, I mean, that's everything to a fighter, you know. When it, besides being an Olympian and trying to win, you know, a gold medal, which, you know, let me just go back to the Olympics when I lost in the quarterfinals, and the guy that beat me, Orfan Dalivas, in the quarterfinals, and it was a close fight. It could have gone either way, but the guy that beat me went on to the finals and got a silver medal. And the Cuban, Juan Lemos, that won the gold medal, I had beat 3 months before at the World Challenge. You know, I should have won at least a bronze medal, but, you know, they had the new computer scoring system, and there was a lot of bad decisions going on. That was the past. So I turned, yeah, fighting for the world title. You turn pro, what do you want to do? You want to become a world champion. I get a shot at fighting for the vacant IBF title with Anthony Stevens. Why? Because terrible Terry Norris was there. He had one of the belts. He had two of the belts, I believe. WBC, IBF, he might have been undisputed, but anyways, he ended up vacating that belt, so they left me and Anthony Stevens fight for the vacant title, who Anthony Stevens fought Felix Trinidad, gave him a hell of a fight. He fought a lot of good guys and beat a lot of good guys. And, you know, the fight was on free TV. He was on ABC in Las Vegas, Nevada. It was, I tell you what, it was in April of 1997, when De La Hoya fought Pernell Whitaker. De La Hoya fought Pernell Whitaker that night at the Thomas and Mack Center, and I fought
at the Tropicana, right?
At the Tropicana, yeah. Anthony Stevens on ABC Wild World of Sports during the day. And so there was a lot of media there, you know, because of De La Hoya, Pernell Whitaker fight later that evening at the Thomas and Mack Center. And it was, I mean, it was, what did it mean to me? It meant everything. I mean, this is what you've been working for all your life. You know, after you turned pro, you know, you had a good, a great amateur career, and you turn pro, and obviously you want to be a world champion. You want to fight the best. So it meant everything to the Marquez family, all the hard work that we put in and dedication. It had paid off, you know, it paid off. And but now, you know, you win the title, and it's, you know, that it's always hard to, they said, once you win it, it's harder to keep it because everybody wants a piece of you. And, you know, my mentality was, you know, back when I was, you know, me and my father, like, you know, we wanted to fight the best. It wasn't so much business or about the money. It was more like, let's just fight the best, you know, to make history, you know, to try to be in the history books forever, you know, fight the best fighters in the world. It was it, to us, it wasn't about the money. I mean, it's business too, you know, but I feel like nowadays it's more business. A lot of fighters don't want to lose that. Oh, they're undefeated. You know, we were okay with losing and coming back. You know, so yeah, it was everything when I won the world title. It meant everything to us.
You know, it's a great feeling because we're not even at 30 minutes yet, and just in that amount of time, You've touched my heart, bro, because you could tell that boxing, it isn't just a sport to you. It isn't something that you just love. It's your heart. You know, I've had Pernell Whitaker, Evander Holyfield, James Lightsout, Tony, you name them, they've been on my show. And when you listen to them talk, the things that are the most relevant to them were the early days, the Golden Gloves, the Olympics. Those are the moments that are most cherished by you guys. And that's when you know a fighter truly loves what he's accomplished, what he did, and who he is, because it's the beginning that creates us. It's our heart that moves us forward. You know, at one time, correct me if I'm wrong, but bro, I think you were Oscar De La Hoya's roommate at one time during the Olympics, weren't you?
Yeah, he was my roommate. Yeah, we actually, you know, we're on the national team together. Like, I was on the national team first, 89, 90. He came in, like, in late 90, 91, actually 91. And we just became good friends. So every time we would travel to different countries, we would, you know, we would room together. And we became really good friends, yeah.
You know, see, I got to work with him when he got into MMA and he did the Tito Ortiz Chuck Liddell fight. And I was the only one second to Larry King that got to interview Chuck Liddell, and it's a moment I'll never forget. You know, it's a horrible night for Golden Boy Promotions, but one of my sponsored fighters, Victor Morales Jr., has signed with him, and he's got a tremendous future going forward. You know, Raul, I told you the show would be kind of different. It wouldn't be your normal sports show. So on my final question of this interview, I just want you to think for a moment. When you walk in a gym and you turn the lights on and you walk by the mirrored wall or a mirror on the wall or you look at the ring, how much does Raul Marquez truly love boxing? And how much has it defined him, not only as a warrior, but to be able to carry on the legacy as a man in his walk?
Oh, man, it's, you know, that's, boxing is my life. I mean, that's, boxing made me, you know, besides, of course, you know, a strong family with my mom and dad and stuff, but with their advice, but boxing made me the person that I was today. Like, it, you know, for sure. Because, you know, when I was young, and I was in school, kindergarten, first grade, I was a real quiet kid. I was a real shy kid. I mean, you even through high school, you know, I was never the kind of kid that you could, you know, that I'm going to get up in front of class and say speech, you know. No, I mean, could I say kids try to bully me when I was younger? Yeah, I had a couple like that early in my life, you know. And like I said, boxing has made me the person I am today, and it has given me a lot. I mean, I've met so many people. Like, I mean, I've traveled the world in amateurs. Like I said, it's, you know, I've been the nicest cities in the world, the United States, hotels. And it's made me strong. You know, like I've never, like I said, I was a very shy person. You know, like when I was in middle school, elementary. And now, you know, like, I mean, I go to my high school reunions and they give me the mic and I'm going to be talking all night long. They can't believe it, you know. And I mean, who would have thought that? I mean, look, I've been with Showtime for 10 years now doing Showbox, and because of because of boxing, my confidence, you know, and all my accomplishments. It just gave me confidence. It got me out of that shell, whatever shell I was in. You know, and I own a boxing gym. I own a we don't compete. My dad owns a gym where they compete, but my gym is boxing fitness. And, you know, they bring a lot of kids to me that are young, you know, 10, 11, they're shy, or they're just, you know, not confident, or they're getting bullied at school. And I said, oh, I love to work with them kids. I love to work with them because I said, trust me, if they're here for a couple of months, they're going to have a different attitude, you know, because I know how to work with those kids. Because I was one of those guys, and I love to work with them.
Calling.
I love to get them out of that shell. Yeah, yeah. I want to get them out of that shell, man. And it happens all the time. I mean, I had like six new ones that signed up a couple of days ago for that same reason. You know, some of them are getting bullied, or some of them are just, you know, real shy. They don't talk much. But I'm looking forward to work with them. Working with them next year. I guarantee in 3 or 4 months they're gonna have different attitudes because I know what to do. I do it all the time. I could relate, you know. I've been there before. So,
boxing
is my life, man. Yeah, boxing is every.
Great.
I mean, it is. It really is.
You know, you were defined by your father. You learn knowledge from the elderly, which I did in my life, which that's where the true knowledge lies, people. And so many people disregard our elderly. And those are the ones with the most cherished stories that can create and invoke aspects of us that we don't even know. And it truly has a new role. You know, so I'm gonna ask you this because I think it's very relevant because I think we don't take enough time in our life to do so. I'm gonna give you, before I give you the mic to give all your, you know, social media and all that, you know, I want to give you an opportunity to make a statement to your wife, to your kids, to those that have pushed you throughout your career, the ones that have whispered the words of intent that you truly needed to hear. The ones that gave you that nudge, the good kick in the ass. You know, I want to give you an opportunity to let those people know what they mean to you, sir.
Oh, man, they're my world. You know, my kids, all five of my kids, my wife, you know, for supporting me in my job and my career with Showtime, my traveling. And, of course, it goes back to my family, too. My mom and my dad for putting me in a good position to their best, you know, that they could, even though, you know, we never had like big money or anything like that, but they did everything they could at that point to get me to where I got to now. And of course, my brother, and my sister always supported me with my boxing career ever since I've been an amateur professional. Now as a broadcaster, I appreciate them, man. I love my family. They've been there for me, and you know, family's always first. It's very important, and that's what I try to tell my kids too. You know, there's a lot of kids out there that are not lucky enough to have their mom and dad together, or you know, maybe that they passed, or you know, just a rough life. You know. And I tell my kids how lucky they are to have their mom and dad together or you know, have their parents be involved in their life. That's everything to me. And, you know, that's what I try to imprint in their head. So, yeah, to me, my family is everything, you know, and I love them and they mean the world to me.
It's beautiful. You know,
yes,
I told you my show is different, and the reason I do it is because, you know, we forget in our lives to reflect upon those moments that change us, create us, and develop us. You know, you're giving to the future as the future was given to you, and I'm humbled you came on the show tonight. We didn't even touch a full layer in the book of Raul Marquez, because there's so many complexities, so many aspects. We didn't even get in commentating. We didn't even really dig down deep. And you can see how the format of my show doesn't allow that, because what it does is it creates a part two in the journey of Don and Raul. You know, and that's what life is meant to be. You know, I hope you enjoyed the show this evening, because I would love to
absolutely,
have you
and I look forward to absolutely. We could get into more of the broadcasting, how that started, and you know how I began doing that, and I really enjoyed it.
I appreciate that, brother. At this time, I'm going to hand the mic to you, and if you have any friends, family, sponsors, social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the program before I let you go, sir. The floor is yours.
All I got to say is, all my fans follow me on Twitter, you know, Raul Marquez 92, and then Instagram, Raul Marquez 1992. Obviously, that's the year that I went to the Olympics, Raul Marquez 1992 or Raul Marquez 92. And then I have my Facebook, Raul Marquez. I do a lot of stuff over here with Henson Ford, Henson Brand in Espanol. Make sure you guys keep supporting Showtime Boxing. Watch me on Showbox. This past Saturday, I went on the big stage with Al Bernstein, Mauro Ranallo, and Brian Custer. You know, we don't know what the future holds, but, you know, hopefully they'll bring me back. I think, from what I see on social media and from people telling me, they say I did a hell of a job, a really good job. So hopefully they'll bring me back and just support boxing. You know, boxing is a great sport. It's a beautiful sport. It's done a lot for me, my family, my life. And God bless everybody. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we look forward to 2021. Hopefully it's a better year than this year, you know?
Right? You know,
yes.
Before I let you go real quick, man, I'm sorry, but Mauro Ranallo is a tremendous man. I've had the opportunity to work with him several times. You know, as you know, I came in the boxing real quick. But on our next show, we'll have to start it off not only with your commentary side, but I want to leave people with one thought. You truly wouldn't know one of the greatest cutmen in the sport if it wasn't for Raul Marquez. You know, he gave a man, Jacob Stitch Duran, an opportunity to come up to the top level, and the rest is history. You know, Raul, there's so many complexities and so many layers to you. Next time we're probably going to have to schedule an hour show, brother, because we really need to share who you truly are with the world. You have a Merry Christmas.
Absolutely.
God bless you, brother, and God bless your family. And you stay safe, and I look forward to the next opportunity that we get to meet again.
Thank you, my man. It was an honor to be on. It was great, man. Have a great night.
You too. God bless you, brother.
Okay.
Adios.
Alrighty. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, El Diamante, Raul Marquez, you know, we didn't even touch deep into the show, but I had a blast. You know, I want to thank my sponsor, Juan Martinez with Finished MMA. Tremendous man. Tremendous, tremendous man. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here. You know, so, gracias, canal. You know, with that being said, I want to thank my sub-sponsors, the 86ers.net with Alfred and Freddie, Cutman for Hire with Jacob Stitch-Duran, and Juan Ramirez and Bite Me Mouthguards with Jill Rice. You know, what a tremendous night. I felt a hell of a lot better today than I have been in quite some time, even though I still got major issues. But you know what? God bless you. And God bless America. Here's a little Lee Greenwood on our way out.
Tomorrow all things were gone, I'd work for all my life. my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the